Good afternoon, or excuse me, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Satnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanyan Wasiyake. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. Let me double check our recording levels here, and they appear to be okay for now. I think we'll do that. Okay. Okay, we're set to go. A couple of announcements. This week marks the first anniversary of our teaching on Pal Talk. In that time, in that 1 year, I just got to looking at this. In that time, we have taught and recorded 86 shiurim, averaging about 40 minutes each. Baruch Hashem. God willing, we will teach at least that many shiurim this year. The second announcement is, this upcoming Wednesday, I will be undergoing examination and tests as a part of a medical research study in which I'm participating. And accordingly, this week's Wednesday shiur is being rescheduled for the very next day at the same time. So instead of being this Wednesday, our next shiur and its rebroadcast will take place this Thursday with no change in the time or place. Just on the day. So instead of hearing this or coming to class this next Wednesday, come on Thursday instead. All right. Now, before I begin today's teaching, I'll do as I do every day before the teaching, before we start the shiur, and that is I'll recite the Kaddish for the dead and for the mourners of the dead. Please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you are close who has passed away. In doing so, you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yiskadov Yishkadash Merabo, Bomo Divero Kirase, Vyamlik Melkase, Makayakon Uvyomakon Uvkaya Dekol Bes Yisrael, Agalo Uvizman Karyev. Imru Omein. Yehesh me rabo mavorak, Leolam ule ome omayo, Yis barak viis tabak viis barar viis ramam, Viis nase viis hadar viis alev viis halal, Shmedikadsho beraku, Laelo minko berkaso visharoso, Tushpachoso venekamoso, Da amiron beomo veimru omein. Yehesh lomo rabo min shamayo, Vekayim leinu. Ve'alkol Yisrael ve'imru omein. O say, Shalom bimromov, hu yashe shalom aleinu ve'alkol Yisrael ve'imru omein. Thank you very much. One last check of the recording levels. And moved up a little inexplicably. I don't know how it does that. It tends to creep up and then max out. Okay, I think we're all right. Well now, getting on to today's shiur. We have, if you will remember, we've moved into a new topic, and that topic is on Avodah, or service to God. And in the shiur that we attended before the last one, so two shiurs back, you may remember that I asked a rhetorical question, and it was this: what then is our Avodah? Which is, of course, means service to God. So I was saying, what then is, or should be, or does God want our service to Him to be? And I answered that question by saying that we're called upon to be a mirror that shines. Now that has mystical significance. It's discussed in both, that term appears both in the Yetzirah, the Sefer Yetzirah, excuse me, and that's the book that's attributed, the mystical book that's attributed to Abraham, our father, our blessed father, and in Sefer HaZohar, the book of splendor, and it's discussed in quite a bit of depth in Sefer HaZohar. So I answer by saying that we're called upon to be a mirror that shines. That is, and this is what it means, a vessel that not only receives God's light from above, and there's an allusion in this metaphor that I'm using about a vessel that receives God's light from above, that allusion is to each of the 10 holy sephirot. Each one of the sephirot are vessels. Each one is a vessel made of light. That vessel is made of God's light, and into that vessel from on high, from Ein Sof through the fifth world of Adam Kaman, or if you're going downward, it'd be the first world. Going upward, it'd be the fifth world, and humans can't go there. Cannot reach there. In fact, humans can't reach Keter. But that's a subject of another teaching. But anyway, there's this illusion when we say that we're called upon to be a mirror that shines, that is a vessel that not only receives God's light from above, but pours it out into the world and into others here below. What I'm talking about is I'm making a reference, a hidden reference, or an allusion, allusion, A-L-L-U-S-I-O-N, to the 10 holy sephirot, each one of which is made from God's light into a vessel, and then, in a second action, each of those vessels is filled with a different type of God's light to form the substance, the essence of each one of God's attributes. Because remember, what's going on here in creation is God is revealing himself to the world. God is creating a mystical spiritual structure or body of himself. And we can diagram that. We can draw a figure, not diagram, but we can draw a figure that looks very much like the diagram of the holy 10 holy sephirot. This is God's form and likeness, in which not only man, but the entire universe, all of creation, is imprinted and is based upon. Okay, so our avada is to be like those 10 sephirot, well, the first 9 anyway, in that they not only receive the influx of God's perfect goodness from above in the form of light, but when they fill up and reach their capacity, that light, which is a light of infinite abundance, and so it continues to flow, continues to come into Sephira Hukma, second Sephira, and so it radiates out, it flows out. If you view it as like a river of light, it pours into from Keter into Hukma, fills up Hukma, flows into and begins to flow into Bana. Now, Bana has, before it receives any of this influx of light, has been formed into a vessel, a holy vessel. Or sometimes they're called spheres or other things, but they are a vessel that receives and holds God's holy light from above. Now, I want you to think about this. A vessel, let's put it this way. The outpouring of good from its source is limited by the capacity of the recipient, and so in this case, Bana, which is empty, being empty, has the greatest capacity that its structure and design allows to receive the perfect goodness that is passed on to it from Sephira Hukma. And then when she, Bana, the Holy Mother, known as Ima, receives all that she can hold, she emanates light down, and it goes so on and so forth down through this zigzag pattern like a lightning strike. another metaphor for what's occurring in creation, down through until it comes to each one of these, both receiving, being empty, here's the sequence, being empty, having potential, that's the form of the structure, having potential, being empty, and then receiving the influx of God's blessing in the form of God's perfect goodness, His light, and then overflowing with that goodness and passing it on to the next Sephira in line, until it comes to the tenth Sephira, Malkut, also known as Shekinah, God's divine presence in the world. Malkut is kingdom, means kingdom. Okay? The light comes down to there, enters in, that vessel is empty, just like all the others, enters in, but look, it doesn't go anywhere. There's only one line on the chart of the diagram of the ten holy Sephirot, which I'm hoping by now you all have a copy of and are looking at. All nine of the ones above Malkut have multiple channels and pathways connecting them for them to both receive and then reflect back up as well as pass on down below emanations of light, of God's perfect goodness. Different musical tones. If you want to look at it in terms of a musical metaphor, it's like each one of these attributes is a different note in heavenly music, playing wondrous chords of music. Each note, sometimes combining with another note to make a certain chord, and then at other times with maybe two other sephirot or notes to form this heavenly music, which is creation, which is the revelation of God's likeness in the form of the world, in the form of mankind, until it gets to Malkut, kingdom. And there you see only one channel. That's the channel or the pathway coming from Isod, Olam, foundation of the world, which is directly above Malkut, coming from there into Malkut. There's only one channel. And that is the channel by which all of the light of the other Sephirot are gathered in Isod, or Tzadik, which means the righteous one, which is Isod Olam, foundation of the world, gathers together all of God's light and then passes that light on to the kingdom. Malkut, Shekinah, God's divine presence in the world. And then it does not, that light is said to be the mirror that does not shine. So we have the mirror that shines, which with great specificity and at the greatest level of detail consists of all nine of the top Sephirot, the top nine Sephirot. They are all constitute one large mirror that shines. And individually, each one of them is a smaller mirror that shines. Shines forth what? Shines forth its own particular attribute of God. Or, in terms of the musical metaphor, rings forth its particular note in the cosmic symphony. Okay? But when it comes down to Malkut, Malkut is the mirror that does not shine, because it can only reflect that which it receives. It has no attributes of its own. No attributes of its own. Rather, it is God's presence in the world, God's divine presence in the world, Shekinah. And it has no attributes of its own. It has only the attributes it has received. Whereas each one of the Sephirot above, in addition to all of the attributes it's received from above it, of the other Sephirot, it also has its own unique essence, such as Chesed has the essence of Gedula, loving kindness, mercy, and Gevura has the essence of strength. Okay. And we can go on and on with that, but I won't get off on that in any more depth than I have. Suffice it to say, the Shekinah, God's divine presence in this world, has no special attribute. It is nothing but a receptacle. It does not pass on to any more Sefirot. Why is this? Because there are no other Holy Sefirot to pass it on to. There are these 10 attributes of God which constitute the Sephirotic worlds. There are 4 worlds here. 4 upper worlds, 4 spiritual worlds, the Sephirotic worlds. And what it has received in Malkut is all of the light of the 9 above, and none of its own light. It has no light of its own. The light it shines forth is only the combined light of the 9 Sefirot above. So Malkut can receive, as a vessel it can receive, and indeed it does receive, but it cannot pass it on to another Sephirah, because there are no more Sephirah, because the Sephirotic worlds, the upper world, the supernal worlds, ends with Malkut. Below that, not on the chart, is the lower world, the world of time, space, and matter, the physical universe. However, because Shekinah means God's divine presence, in Malkut, the kingdom, well, where's the kingdom? The kingdom included because there's nothing that's not God, and God is, I mean, everything is a part of God. It is an expression of God. Everything that's been created is an expression of God. Okay, so Shekinah, which is the last Sefirot, it's within Shekinah that all the rest of creation exists. Shekinah represents the bottom Sefirot, actually the Sefirot of the bottommost world, which is the world of conclusion, Asiya. The world of, some people call it the world of action. I don't care for that definition. I prefer the world of conclusion. The conclusion of what? The conclusion of God's revelation of himself through the ray of creation. Another word for the 10 Sefirot, the zigzag pattern, the lightning strike. Another word for that is the ray of the holy, or the sacred ray of creation. And it stops. It stops somewhere. It stops with the creation of the physical universe, because God decided he did not need to have any lower than that, any worlds lower than the physical universe of space, matter, and time. So the Shekinah is the source, just like a nursing, like there's a nursing mother. The Shekinah is the mother whom we receive our sustenance through. Okay, we are a physical manifestation, largely of the Shekinah, but the Shekinah, remember, contains all the attributes of the 9 Sefirot above. So God is represented in all of his glory in the Shekinah, and in fact, an earlier name for Shekinah was Kavod, God's Kavod, God's glory. And so that glory is reflected in the physical world, which is more of an outer, less than a lower world. Now remember, everything, the universe, even though it's not on the Sephirotic tree, is God. Different manifestations of God. You can view them as levels, like vertically, or you can view them as inner and outer, or spiritual and material. All right. So, we've talked a little bit here about the mirror that shines versus the mirror that doesn't shine, and about what that has to do with the structure of the universe. And so I said that our avodah, our service to God, is to be a mirror that shines. Not just a vessel that receives, but one that also pours out into the world and into others here below the divine light that we have received. And then I quoted Isaiah chapter 60, verses 1 to 3, which are short, and I'll read them here. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the people. But the Lord shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you. And the nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Baruch Hashem. Now, I said in this second to last shiur that this is a proof text as to what God expects of us. And as I just described, he expects us, since we have been blessed and nourished, since we have been strengthened by the light of God's glory, and since he wants us to be mirrors that shine in this world, then it's our avodah, our service to God, to reflect that glory, that light, that blessing, that nourishment, onto our brothers and sisters, and indeed, onto all our relations. And by all our relations, I mean all living things, plants and animals, microbes, bacteria, all of the biosphere. We are all related. We are all life forms that have come from God. And so we will reflect that glory that we receive onto all of our relations. Not just the close ones, not just the ones that we prefer to hang around with, but especially those that may have troubled us, have given us pause to be around them, worry to have any relationships with them. Because why? Because when we do this, God sees his perfect goodness that he created us, for which he created us, so he could share that perfect goodness with us. He sees that goodness shared and spread out among more and more instances of the biosphere, of life, of human beings, specifically now, of human beings, because we're the thinking and speaking beings. We're the ones that have a holy soul. So God sees this perfect goodness spread out and shared on the level of our world and then reflected back up. Here's where the lightning strike that comes down and stop-action high-speed cameras with stop-action photography have shown that the light shows up in an action coming from the cloud to the ground, starts at the cloud, goes down, hits the ground, and that's not over. That's just one part of the strike. It then bounces back up to the cloud, and then goes back down to the ground, and then back up to the cloud, etc. Until the difference in electrical potential is equalized. The electrical charge, in other words, between the cloud and the ground is neutralized. Which is, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but this is an illustration. Lightning is an illustration of the law of three, of the three forces in the universe. Which, remember, look at the diagram of the 10 Holy Sephirot. You've got three pillars, the right-hand pillar, which is the pillar of mercy, the left-hand pillar, which is the pillar of severity, and then the center column or pillar, which is the pillar of righteousness, uprightness. Okay? It is the law of three says that there has to be two opposites that are reconciled. On the right hand, so let's look at that lightning strike. On the right hand side, we can say that that's a positive charge. We can just arbitrarily assign it. You can turn it around negative if you want, but I'm going to say on the right-hand side is a positive charge, and on the left-hand side is a negative charge. And there's this potential built up, this energy builds up in these two columns, in these two opposing forces, until finally that potential overcomes the gap. It's just like a spark plug. The gap between the clouds and the ground has air in between, and that air is known as a dielectric. It's an insulator. It does not like to pass electrical current across it. Same thing with a spark plug between the body and the little nose thing at the top. And you can see I'm not a mechanic. But in any event, when the charges of the two opposites, the holy affirming, the positive charge, and the wholly denying, the negative charge, build up to a certain potential, they have to be reconciled. Because the tension between them finally, the energy between them finally overcomes the insulating factor of the dielectric. This is the gap. This is the space in which worlds are created. Worlds are created in that gap. And what do we call that gap? On the diagram of the, tree of the ten holy sephirot. That's the pillar of the upright. Now, if we were talking Indian religion, we'd call that the good red road. The road of balance and harmony. It's the road or path of reconciliation and harmony. The two opposites are harmonized into a third. And now I'm talking in terms of, if you want to look at it just in terms of philosophical terms, you have a thesis, and then automatically you have an antithesis or antithesis. Indeed, neither of those can exist without the other, because by definition, that's what they are, is they're opposites. But if that's all there were, there could be no creation. If God only consisted of his opposites, there would be no creation. But God consists of a third force. That is the holy reconciling. That's represented by the third column. And look what's at the top of that third column. What's at the top of that third column? You're looking right now, and those of you who know or see it are saying, oh, that's the first sephirot to come into existence. That's Keter. And sometimes referred, well, its full name, it's abbreviated by Keter, because there's usually not enough room on the sephirot to write the whole name, but it's Keter Elyon, meaning crown of the God Most High. Okay? There's another name for that. What does a king do? A king decides the disputes in the kingdom. Remember what Solomon did? Solomon sat in, Solomon sat in council and held like a kingly court, a regal court. And people would come to him with disputes, and then he would decide. Okay, here's your dispute. I'm now deciding what to do. And once I announce my decision, that's the end of the dispute. There shall no longer be enmity or conflict between the two parties. Moses did this so much while he was out in the wilderness with the Israelites that a group of the elders, and I believe they were led by Moshe's servant Joshua, and his brother, his older brother Aharon, who was the high priest, made the priest. Actually, the high priest was Moshe, but because he's who installed and anointed with oil, meaning commissioned, and his brother Aharon. But it was at the direction of God. So anyway, it was those two with some others who came to him, or maybe it was by themselves, came to Moshe and said, "You can't keep this up, man. You are sitting out here for hours every day. There's 600,000 people out here. 600,000 men. 600,000 men. Plus all of their families and their households and friends. And there are more disputes to be resolved than there is time on this earth for you to resolve them. And you have more important things to do than to do this. So appoint some judges." So that's what he did. Okay, but that's what's at the top of that center column. The column of reconciliation is the king. The king who resolves disputes. What's another name for Keter? Raizon. Raizon. R, I think spelled in Hebrew, R-A-I-T-Z-O-N. Right zone. And that means will. That means the will of the king. So it is, so God, who consists of these opposites arranged in conflict, in opposition to each other, which it means by definition in conflict with each other, reconciles a conflict by dint of a third force, which is his will. And it is only when that third force, the force of God's supreme will, supernal will, as it is, enters into the crucible. Now, all of these words are charged and loaded. All of these words I'm using are triggering in my mind a multitude of interweaving other terms. Okay? But what you have is, you have in the gap, is another word for it. In the gap. Or as God said in Ezekiel, the breach in the wall. I have looked for a man to fill the breach, that I may not, to keep me from passing that wall and destroying all the towns and cities and villages and farms on the other side. But I have found that man not. Of course, who is that man? It's that man is the upright, the righteous, because this is the pillar of the righteous. And what's at the bottom of that pillar? At the bottom of that pillar is Tzadik Yesod Olam, the righteous one. Or another word for righteous one is the just one. Righteous means justice too, the just one. Or another word is upright, the upright one, who is the foundation of the world, the foundation of the pillar. We say, well, what world is that? It's a pillar. Well, no, actually, it's a gap. It's a pathway or channel through which the force of will can come down and make contact in the center. Now I'm trying to go slow here, but I'm very excited. I'm trying to go slow. In the center at Sephira number 6, Tiferet, Yisrael, beauty of Yisrael, also known as Malka Kedisha, the Holy King, also known as Malka Kedisha HaMashiach, the Holy King Messiah. What is a Messiah? A Messiah is a Redeemer, someone who brings salvation to those who are troubled. So in this gap, in this breach, between the conflict of opposites, the divine supernal will in Keter comes down and comes into the crucible that is Sephira Tiferet, the Holy King Messiah, also known as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, the one to whom we direct all of our prayers and petitions, all of our blessings. When we say, Blessed art Thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, we're not referring to Keter, we're referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tiferet, the Sephira Tiferet, the beauty of Israel. Okay, that is a sephirot, a vessel. It's a tort. Okay, I'm talking about in alchemy as a tort, a crucible. It's a place in which tremendous energy is brought to bear and contained. And then out of that, when will comes down and joins that with the fourth force, which is the fourth, which is mankind, but not just any mankind. We're talking about the Tzadik. We're talking about the person who's upright, the righteous one, the foundation of the world, the intermediary between the upper world and the lower world, between the inner and the outer world, the world of spirit versus the, as a in contradistinction to, or just say vis-a-vis the world of matter and time. The human joins and comes into the same place. We're talking about Devakut now, aren't we? We're talking about a form of contact with the God Most High, which is Keter Elyon, the Crown Most High, also known as the Supernal Will. So the Supernal Will is sent from Crown Most High and meets in the gap, the breach in the wall, in the tort, in the alchemical tort. And what happens? This energy is discharged. And when it's discharged, a new world comes into existence. That's right, folks. We take part, each and every one of us, or at least those of us who seek to be righteous people, who seek to only do good by everybody, who seek to carry out God's will in this world, who try to identify those who are wicked and not get sucked into what they're doing, but keep our shields up, keep a veil between the wicked and us who are trying to be upright. Now, we don't always succeed, and in fact, we vacillate between wickedness and uprightness. But when we are in the mode of being upright, we join with the holy will in the court of Melchizedek HaMashiach. And there is salvation in a blinding burst of light that creates a new world. Okay, that's how all of the worlds got made. Now you're saying, well, wait a minute. God didn't make man until the sixth or seventh day? It was both of those days, wasn't it? The unensouled man and the ensouled man, sixth and seventh days. So wait a minute. You know, he created. You're telling me that mankind was involved, was the fourth element in the creation of the universe, of the supernal worlds, in fact, in the revelation of God. Man plays a central role in the revelation of God in the form of the universe, in the form of the supernal worlds themselves. You can say, well, how can it be? It wasn't made. I will just reply by saying, God is infinite, and God is omnipresent, and God is omnipotent. I hope I didn't repeat any of those three there. But God is everywhere. God is infinite, which means that you cannot define God by assigning him to anywhere, because when something's infinite, where the concept of where or place becomes absurd. Okay? But God is also omnipotent, all-powerful. And you take those three attributes and you combine them, and from my point of view, God has the wherewithal, I'll just use that word, the wherewithal to do anything he wills. That's why there's a sephirot, and it's the first sephirot from which all the others were emanated, that's known as right zone, supernal will. That's the power of the king. Like Mel Brooks said in that crazy movie, The History of the World Part 2 or something, he kept saying it over and over again. He kept saying, it's great to be the king. It's great to be the king. Well, God is the king. In fact, kingship was one of the major focuses of early Jewish mysticism. It was the main focus of Merkabah mysticism. We worked the mystic works our way up through the halls, through the palaces, until finally he comes into the chamber of the king, who's he's sitting on the throne. Doesn't want to converse with him, because at that time the king was so awesome and so transcendent at this stage in Jewish mysticism that the ultimate experience was just to see the king. Was to come into the king's presence, even if you didn't put your mystical eyes on the king, but instead fell upon the floor on your face, fell with your face upon the floor at the foot of the throne in abject awe and fear. So the king can do anything. And so when you ask me, how is it that man participated in bringing together all of the worlds below Atika Kadisha, the ancient holy one, the three top sephirot that's known as the world of emanation, from which all the other sephirot were emanated in groups of three triads? Look below them. Just look at how this is arranged on your diagram showing the ten holy sephirot. The tree of life, Etzchaim, that's what its name is, the tree of life, Etzchaim. Look at that. You've got the top three triads. That's Atika Kadisha, the holy ancient one. God emanated that, but from there on down, man, and it could be even, because I don't know this for sure, could be that man played, that primordial man played a role in the first one. Okay? But the emanation, the creation of new worlds, and that's what we're talking about here. Remember, there's four worlds. There's Atzilut, the world of emanation. That's the top three triads. Then there's Berea, the world of creation. And it's the next three, which ends with, I'm going by memory, I don't have it in front of me, but I've seen it so much I can do this. It's Tiferet, Yisrael, the sixth Sephira. And then there's the emanation of the next three, but it's not just those three, which are the world of Yetzirah, the third world, world of formation. Because it's not only those three, because that Tiferet is in two worlds simultaneously. Tiferet is the bottommost Sephira in the world of Berea, of creation, and the topmost Sephira in the world of Yetzirah, in which there's four worlds. But still, they're emanated three at a time, if you see what I'm talking about. And this has to do with the law of three, which is really the law of four for the creation to occur. It takes the combination of God's will and man's righteousness, uprightness, to create a new world. That then, and actually, I needed to say it this way. It takes the combination, it takes man's uprightness in accordance with God's supernal will to reconcile the opposites of the left and the right. The holy affirming and the holy denying. And when those are reconciled through the agency of supreme will, right zone, the first sephirot, and Tzedek, Isod, Olam, okay, the righteous one of the world, the upright one of the upright one who's the foundation of the world, foundation of that pillar. When those two extremes come together, then they provide the third reconciling force that ends the conflict, but provides the dynamic energy that allows the creation of the next world. And that, folks, is how it works, at least from the view of Kabbalah. Or at least, I'll say, from the view of my Kabbalah, the Kabbalah of Reb Yanyel. Not to pat myself on the back. But we're going to get into what I'm talking about right now. What I just revealed to you is an innovation in Torah that I just brought down, that was revealed to me in this moment. Parts were revealed over time, but it all came together in this moment as a result of the Bat Kol, the voice of the All. Okay? And that's the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh. That's how that works. And let me check our time here, as I think we're going to have to end. So yeah, it's 44 minutes and counting. So we've gone on long enough on things that I had not planned to speak, but which the Shekinah said, no, this is what I want to have taught today. And so that's what gets taught. I teach, I go where the Spirit leads me. I have harnessed my will to God's will. And I've surrendered my ego to the King. And so I do what I believe in good faith and with much prayer at all times to be the will of God in terms of what I teach and what I reveal to you. Okay, now, there are going to be those of you out there, or those of you who aren't there, who get wind of this among the Orthodox, that are going to say, what? What's this? You're listening to some Kabbalah teacher, some Kabbalist who calls himself a Rebbe, doesn't doesn't want to call himself a rabbi, of course, because he didn't go to yeshiva. He didn't get graduated. No, that's right, I didn't. I'm a rebbe. That means I'm a rabbi. Rabbi only means teacher. I'm a rabbi who learned in the tradition that predates yeshivas, which are only in the last 100 or so years that yeshivas even existed. I'm talking about formalized university-style teaching of Torah and Talmud. Okay. Well, I've learned all that stuff. Not much. I've learned Torah, but I haven't learned Talmud. And I've learned the mystical interpretation, the spiritual interpretation of that part of the, of what's known as esoteric Kabbalah, which means the Zohar, and as it's been changed over time. I learned that one-on-one with a teacher who learned it one-on-one with his teacher. And I spent more time in learning with this teacher than any of those students learn in their yeshivas and get their fancy little certificates and say, oh, I'm an ordained rabbi now. They don't use the word ordained, but anyway, I'm a rabbi now, and I'm something. Well, they're going to hear about this. They're going to say, what? This guy is saying that he is making an innovation on the Torah? Who does he think he is? Doesn't he know that prophecy has been sealed? That the time of prophecy is over? And that therefore the Torah can no longer be explained any different than it was explained as of the time of the last prophet? And by the way, we will tell you what it was that the prophet said, what that meant. We will be the arbiters of spiritual meaning. Not you. And we have locked the Torah up. And it's fixed and immutable. Which I say, if you've done that to it, then it's died and it's all over. But you haven't, because there's still the mystics that predated all of you guys. And I happen to be one of them. And we will discuss in our next meeting. Remember, on Thursday, not on Wednesday, it's postponed one day. On Thursday, I hope now I'm leaving you sort of in a cliffhanger, with a cliffhanger here. When we come back on Thursday, I will tell you how it is that the rabbis who say that the time of prophecy is ended, and that there can no longer, and that therefore there can no longer be any new interpretation that disagrees with the Talmudic interpretations, how they're wrong and why they're wrong, and on what authority we are still allowed and encouraged and commanded by God to interpret, to find new interpretations of the mysteries and secrets of Torah. Baruch Hashem. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. It's been recorded, so it'll be rebroadcast tonight in the same room at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific. And until we meet again next Thursday, I ask that God's blessing be upon you, that He make His light to shine upon you, and that that light be reflected in your face and shine in the darkness to others who will notice this radiance coming from your face. And they'll say, oh, what is this? I've got to check this out. All right. I pray that this happens for you, and that God protect and watch over you in all your goings and comings. And I'll see you again on Thursday. And in the meantime, don't forget to remember God at least twice a day. Go from strength to strength. Be well. Zygesund.